It was Introduction to Spin Qubits and Lateral Quantum Dots, and I won't talk very much about the spin, so I just removed that part. And here in the background, there's very nice data that were taken in a vertical quantum dot, so if you want, during the question period, you can ask me about it, or during the lunch hour, because it's very interesting, but I won't get to it in my talk. So to start off, I'll explain what a quantum dot is, and then how we fabricate it, and how we can use the gates on the structure to control the number of qubits and the spin of the qubit on the dot. And finally, I'll conclude and maybe a little introduction to what Sophie will talk to you in the next talk. So as Mr. Moskow said this morning, there's a lot of different suggestions as to how to make a qubit. So here there's trapped ions, where you use the internal degrees of freedom of the ions that you've trapped in a magnetic field as a qubit. There's NMR. Here there's a superconducting line resonator with a squid in the middle that's used as a qubit. And there's quantum dots. And something that they all have in common is the aim is to make a quantum computer eventually. So for the rest of the talk, I'll just concentrate on the quantum dots, and more specifically, the lateral configuration quantum dots. So first, what is a quantum dot? In our case, it's confining a single electron in all three spatial dimensions. I think Judy later will talk about a quantum dot with a heavy hole. So, but in our case, it's really just an electron. And the reason why we chose an electron is that it has plus or minus spin, up or down, and there's no third option. So it's a perfect two-level system. And to discriminate between whether the electron has a spin up or a spin down, all we need to do is apply a magnetic field. And this creates a Zeeman splitting. Someone yesterday explained really well what the Zeeman splitting was. So if you apply a magnetic field, the up energy, well, the down energy here is higher energy than if the electron has a spin up. So all you need to do to know the spin of the electron is measure its energy, and you've got your answer. But now the question is, how do we confine spatially an electron? Because it's really small, and how do you get it in a box and get it to stay there? So the first part is to confine it in the z direction using a proper substrate. So the substrate that we've decided to use in our group is gallium arsenide, aluminum gallium arsenide heterostructure. So what I've drawn here is the energy of the conduction band as a function of the position in the substrate. So this is really z, its position. And what happens when you put the gallium arsenide in contact with the aluminum gallium arsenide is the band structure will change at the interface, so that the only place where the conduction band is below the Fermi energy of the electrons is right here. So your 2D electron gas forms at the interface between the gallium arsenide and the aluminum gallium arsenide. And that's, so they're all confined inside, I think it's 10 nanometer z direction here. So since this is a quantum well, all your electrons will be there. And you've confined your electrons in one dimension of space. And how do we create this heterostructure here? Well, we buy it, because it's really hard to make. And there's only two or three labs in the world that make them properly. But the idea is that you have a chamber with a vacuum, and you have a substrate here. And then here you have gallium arsenide and aluminum. And you heat them so that they sublimate very slowly. And they'll go deposit themselves on the substrate here that's rotating. And since you're evaporating them very slowly, they'll have time to arrange themselves in a crystalline configuration that you want. OK, so next, how do we confine them in the x and y direction? So we've got our gas here, but it's a plane. And we want to have really a dot with only one electron. So what we do is we evaporate gates on top of our substrate. So it's just any metal. We use aluminum. And we deposit a gate here and there. And when you apply a voltage on your gates, if you apply a negative voltage, since the electrons are negative, they'll want to move away from where you're applying your voltage. So it makes a zone in your 2D gas where there are no electrons anymore. And if you apply a bigger negative voltage, you'll push them away even more. So here we see that if we were trying to apply a current from one side of our substrate to the other, it'll be smaller than in the previous case where we had a smaller voltage, because here the zone where the electrons can be is more pinched. And if we take a very large voltage, well, we get no electrons at all that can pass through our substrate. So that's how we confine the electrons in the x and y direction, is just by choosing the proper geometry of these gates here. So how do we fabricate the gates? How do we get our metal on top of our substrate? Well, since we're trying to confine electrons, and those are very, very small, and we don't want 1,000 electrons on our dot, we only want one, we need to make our gates really, really tiny. So this is like on a scale of about maybe 300 nanometers across or 200 nanometers across. So to make our gates that small, we need to use electron beam lithography. Perfect. We need to use electron beam lithography, and that goes as follows. So we have our substrate, which is our gallium arsenide heterostructure, and we deposit an E-beam resist. And this resist will react when we expose it to electrons. So we use an electron beam, either an E-beam writer or a SEM, which focalizes electrons on a very small dot. And it'll make our resin react chemically so that when we use a solvent, a certain solvent, it'll wash away only the parts that were exposed. So once we have holes where we want to put our metal, all we need to do is evaporate our aluminum on it. And then we use a second resist that will react with the resin that wasn't exposed, and we wash away everything else. So now we've got our gates on our substrate. Now, why did we choose this? Why do we choose configurations that look like this for our gates? It's for the following reasons. So here we have a source of electrons, because, this is a view of the top of our substrate, so we really see the gates. But when we apply voltages on this, the regions where the electrons won't be will look about like this also. So these two gates here are used to create like a round surface in the middle where there's electrons, and that's cut off from the other areas where there's electrons. So yeah, it just makes a dot. And then this gate on the top is used to complete the top on top here, so that we get really a round dot in the middle. And also, by applying a more negative voltage here, you can pinch the opening here so that electrons can tunnel more or less easily onto your dot. So you can really control the flow or the current of electrons from the source to your dot and back to your drain. This little electrode here is the one that we use to push or pull the electrons off or onto the dot. So if you apply a big, big negative voltage here, it'll come push away the electrons, and they'll tunnel off onto your dot. And if you apply a positive voltage, the electrons will want to be on the dot because it'll be easier for them. You're applying a positive voltage, so the electrons will tunnel onto your dot. And here are ohmic contacts. Those are just like metal that goes down into your substrate all the way to the gas, so you can apply a current so that you can get a current through. So the number of electrons in your 2D gas aren't limited in number. So the equivalent circuit is this here. And this is what I'll be using for the next couple of slides, so it's important to understand. Here we apply a source voltage in this ohmic contact. We apply the drain voltage in this ohmic contact. And the gate voltage, what I'll call the gate voltage for the rest of the talk, is what we apply on this little electrode here. That's really important. And these two things here are just the tunnel barriers from the source to the dot and from the dot to the drain. So this one is this tunnel capacitance, and this is the tunneling capacitance here. So in our schematic version here, what's in red is really our dot. And all the electrons that are in the red region are the electrons that are on our dot. Okay. So how do we use these gates? Well, this is the electrostatic energy of our dot. And it's just how much energy you need to give the system so that it gets a certain number of electrons on the dot compared to the neutral state. So here, n is the number of electrons actually on your dot compared to the zero electron state, which is the neutral one. And g is the number of those electrons that have accumulated on the edge of the capacitance. And ng depends on the voltages you apply here, here, and here, but mostly on this one, because this is the only one we'll be varying in our experiment. So what happens when we vary Vg? Let's say we put a positive capacitance. So here we have like positive charges compared to the other side. So we'll attract electrons to our capacitance, and electrons will be able to go from the source onto the dot, because here you've made Ng larger. So it becomes energetically favorable to make N larger also, so that EL stays as low as possible. So another way to look at this is, instead of looking at the voltages like in the previous slide, we'll look at the energy. So as we know, electrons are fermions. So here is just the z-axis is energy. This is the source, this is the dot, and this is the drain. So if you apply a voltage on your source, the energy of the highest electron will be mu s. And on your drain, the energy of the highest, the most energetic electron will be mu d. And on your dot, since it's small, the energy levels of the electrons are quantized. So the n minus 1 electron will have this energy level, and the nth electron will have this energy level, and they can't occupy any energy level in between. So as I said, if you vary Vs, you can shift mu s up and down by applying a larger voltage. And same thing with the drain. And this here is the formula for the chemical potential of the nth electron on the dot. And if you, we see here, Ng varies linearly with Vg. So if you change Vg, you'll just be shifting all your levels in a block up and down on your dot. So you can really choose the energy of your electrons on the dot. So what does this do is you know your source voltage and your drain voltage, and you can vary Vg so as to have an energy level of an electron in between the two. And in this case, an electron can tunnel from the source onto the dot and from the drain onto the dot. So you can get a current through your dot. But if you vary Vg so that there are no electron energy levels that are situated between the source and the drain energies, you can't get any current at all through the dot, because here, this transition here, the electron won't be able to gain energy to go up to this energy level, and it can't just tunnel here to this energy level because it's already occupied by an electron, and no two fermions can have the same energy in our drain. So and also we do our experiments at low temperatures, because if we did it at high temperatures, the thermal energy could be sufficient to make the electron hop out even if it was lower energy than the drain. Okay, so this is just a little explanation as how we can measure the spin of an electron on the dot, because now I haven't talked about the spin at all. But if we apply magnetic field, like I said in the beginning of the talk, the energy of your down electron or your up electron will be different. So here there's a QPC. I haven't said what a QPC is, but it's just an object that the current will vary in a very sensitive way with the voltage you apply on the gate and the number of electrons on your dot. So what we do is we change the gate voltage to pull our energy levels down below the source. So an electron will tunnel onto our dot, but we don't know if it'll be down or if it'll be up. And then we wait a certain time to be sure that an electron has had time to tunnel onto the dot, because there's a certain tunnel time associated with our system. So once we get an electron on our dot, we change Vg again here. We lower it so that we move our levels up, so that one level is above the source voltage and another one is below. So now this allows us to read out the spin of our electron, because if it was in the down state, its energy is above the source and it can tunnel out and then back into the lower energy level. Whereas if it was already in the lower energy level, we won't see any change in our QPC because it won't be able to tunnel out. So here, this is what our QPC measures. When we change the voltage, it goes up. When an electron tunnels onto the dot, it goes down. And then here, when we shift the energy back up, the QPC changes again. And the difference between the two is, if an electron tunnels out, we get a signal, and we get another signal when it tunnels back in. Whereas if we get a flat signal here, we know that our electron was in the down state. So to conclude quickly, I've showed that our lateral quantum dots allow us to confine spatially an electron in all three dimensions of space and use it as a qubit, and that the spin of the electron can be determined once it's on the dot. What I haven't explained is how we can control the spin of an electron, because you don't really have a qubit if you can't do operations on it. But there are ways to control the spin of the electron by putting a micromagnet on top of our device and using the magnetic field gradient to control the spin, so we can do arbitrary single spin operations. And there are other devices called double quantum dots that we can use to entangle two qubits together. So with these two points here, we know that we have a universal set of quantum gates, so we can do any qubit operation that quantum computer would require. And that's an important point, because if your qubit can't do that, it's not a valid qubit. And the challenges with these devices are that it's sort of hard to scale them. If you want to have more than 10 and have them be entangled to each other, it like takes a lot of space on your chip, so it's hard to entangle the two furthest ones together. And also, gallium and arsenide have nuclear spins, so those the random magnetic field due to the nuclear spins sort of makes your qubit decohere, but we're working on that. So, thank you.